Representation matters. I know this is a phrase that many of us hear ever so often, and it might sound a bit cliche at this point, but for today's podcast, the work of my guest is a reflection of just that. She's an author for a series of children's books that teaches children about different cultures in a creative and fun way. I do apologize in advance for some technical issues we had during this episode, but please do not let it take away from this experience and also the beautiful insights that were provided. Without further ado, here is episode 3 of the Business and Culture podcast. What up, everyone? Kairis Maggie here, and welcome to Business and Culture Podcast. On this podcast, I interview entrepreneurs who are here living in Canada for them to give you some insights on, you know, what it is like in Canada for any of you who are looking for some tips and insight. So today I have with me Yolanda Marshall. Thank you so much for being here with me.
Hi. I'm so happy to be here. I'm a fan of yours on Instagram, of course. I love your video, the culture and the feel. It's like, yes, here are my people.
Thank you so much. So a funny thing about Instagram, it's really been a great place that I've been able to find different people and just find work that is very similar to like the interest that I have. And I'll let Yolanda talk a bit more about herself, but just for a little introduction. So she was Guyanese born, just like myself. And now she's here in Canada, and she is an author, a great one to that. I've been hearing great stuff about her books, specifically she writes children's book. And what I've noticed with her books is they really touch on involving or implementing some culture aspect to them to highlight the different things in culture for children to learn it. So that's really cool. Kudos to you, Yolanda. Thank you for doing that. So, my dear, tell us a bit more about your journey. I mean, coming here to Canada, what was that like? And was it very like a hard process for you to transition here?
Yeah. So first off, big up my Guyanese people, you know, what a perfect day. I actually woke up this morning and there's a whole two-page spread article of me in the Stabroek newspaper in Guyana.
Oh my goodness.
So, you know, my dad already, when he bought out the store, and all my aunties are calling me, oh, you look so good. Oh God, I gotta go show my neighbor. Oh, you know, they're so proud. So I'm in a Guyanese mood right now. You know, nobody can take me out to that, you know?
As you should.
And when I get off here, I got to go follow up. And you know, so I'm very proud of that. I'm so happy to be here. And I am a child of the diaspora. I've lived most of my life in Canada. So a little bit of me and my migration process. Most of my family actually reside in Canada. I have so many cousins, like over 10 of them, who are older than me, and they're born here in Canada. My family started migrating to Canada in the, I do believe, in the late 70s. I was born in the late 70s. I'm on the cusp right there, right? So I came to Canada on a long vacation when I was 1 year old. So I was, as a 1 year old, traveling with my mom. My mom worked for CARICOM in agriculture and such. She was traveling to many Caribbean islands, and she would travel with myself and my sister. So my first entry into Canada, I was 1 year old. And of course, you're still married, so you can't just move here with us. So we went back to Guyana and whatnot. And I, you know, grew up there. I went through primary school. I was in high school when I left Guyana. So, you know, I wrote my common entrance and I got good grades. Yes. You know, I am hardcore a Caribbean child. You know, I played Mashramani in Guyana. I was the last phase of children who had to like play mass games. And that actually like stopped, I think, about maybe 2 years after I played. And when I played it, I was like the little kids dancing, and I got to meet the president, and like, that is such a major part of history. So when people ask me, how Guyanese are you? I played Mashramani. I played mass games, I would say, right? And Mashramani. I played mass games, like that Guyanese level. I'm a child of a musician. My dad is a very popular jazz musician, Herbert Marshall, in Guyana. And, of course, he plays around the world now. He's a man that doesn't have a home, you know. Sometimes he'll be in Turkey, or he's in Japan, or, you know, he's in Europe and he's in Canada. So right now he's actually in Guyana. It's the longest he's been in Guyana because of COVID. It's like a long vacation for him, right? And of course, my mom and my dad divorced when I was 5 years old, and you know, we lived in Guyana for a while, and I came back to Canada at grade 9.
Okay.
So entering into high school, you know, in Toronto. One thing I will have to say, I know a lot of people have immigrant stories that they come, and it is a struggle. It is a struggle. In many ways, so, you know, on a sociological level, psychological level, emotional, it's you're trying to find your home, you know, and then you're meeting family who are here that you don't know, but they are your family. You're trying to go, do I relate to them or do I not? I was one of those privileged young teens, in a sense, and because my mom worked hard. She is well educated. I mean, she had professors like Walter Rodney. I was like that little kid in her belly listening to Walter Rodney teach it, you know, the University of Toronto. When she came here with a degree, she actually has her master's of business. She studied in New Delhi, India, right? You're coming to this country well-educated, even with family and whatnot. And for most new immigrants, we know we're Canada. We have surgeons and doctors and lawyers driving taxi cabs. So it doesn't matter how educated you are. Her first job in Canada was mopping the floors in the bank. And within a couple months of doing that, she met a manager who was like, Hazel, like, what are you doing? She goes, you know, I moved here and I'm going to work. I'm not going to sit down. My mom was like that. She's a hustler. She doesn't sit down and wait. She made sure she had a job ASAP. And, you know, she, within 2 years, so she met someone and they're like, no, you're way too educated for this. She got a teller entry level job, which once again is, it's below her, but it's good because you have benefits. It's full time, and every single course Royal Bank had, she took it and worked her way up really fast, right? Because we're talking about someone that's a master, like well educated. That's nothing. She was on a mission. So within like about 2-3 years of her being here, we were the barrel kids back home. My mom brought us up, and she owned a home. So my mom, within that time, purchased a condo. So when I came back as a young teen, I was in a condo with my own room, and it had a swimming pool. It was in East York, 10 Sunny Glen. I remember that building that, you know, you drive past it, the highway. Like, that was my place. So I was in a good setting. I would have to say school was a block away. I went to Mark Garneau Collegiate, which was highly multicultural. I mean, that area, a lot of like Middle Eastern. And then you had like Flemington Park, just not too far away. You had a lot of Caribbean people there. So, you know, getting into school, I felt great because first thing I look around, I go, okay, I see a lot of Black people. All right. Yeah. There's Black people here, right? This is good. And then I'm sitting down, I'm waiting for the accent because I know that, like, if it's, I'm hearing a strong Canadian accent, chances are I'm going to have to be prepared for like, oh, where are you from? You know, whatever weird stuff. And then I was hearing like Jamaican accent and I was like, oh, nice. But then I was hearing and I'm like, it sounds a bit watered down, you know, who's who? And then I realized, wait, I got cousins that are born here with Guyanese parents and they have a Guyanese accent. So wait, who was born where, right? But I was so privileged to be at such a multicultural school that there were so many other immigrant kids at the same time, brand new. And then we teamed together. Some of them didn't speak English, but it's okay. We were fresh off the boat together, right? Mm-hmm. And we stuck together. Like, if we're in the same class, okay, we know we'll meet and we'll go. And I continued that throughout school. When new students would come, I always would be like, yeah, you're new, whatever. We're in the same class. I'll get you if you, you know, just to make sure that you adjust well, because I was that kid and I wanted to adjust well. And I'm looking for my tribe, you know, but I was blessed. I found like my friend, one of my best friends to this day, she's Trinidad. She was fresh too. Straight Trini accent. I was like, yes, born in Trinidad. So, you know, you don't have to explain yourself.
Yes.
Then we found like some Jamaicans, some Grenadians. And when you were done, it was like 10 of us or so. You're sitting at a table 10 deep of people fresh off the boat from the Caribbean. Nothing can touch you at that point because you're learning together, right? Yeah. And when someone learns something, it's like, hey, there's this mall or whatever, or, you know, this is where you go to do, this is how you use a vending machine. Cause I'm coming from, we don't have no vending machine, you know, like we had canteens, you go play for some sour and pilori, you know, but
yeah.
So you're learning it with people. So I would have to say, settling into the country in school came easy because I really did find my tribe. Of course, with that, you branched off and it allowed me to continue to learn more about other people. Like I had friends that were, you know, from Somalia. Once again, English was poor, but we kept together. We kept so much together. We were helping each other in school. Like there's this one guy who came from Jamaica with a thick, his accent was so bad. I would have to say he's so bad. We are from the, like same way you have people born in Canada come somewhere and it's like, what are you saying? You know? And it was so thick. But he was smart, and they placed him in English as a second language. We're like, you're from Jamaica. English is your language. And that's the first time I realized how brutal the system can be. And let me tell you something. We're like, dude, you write English. You came from an English country. How, this is not right. Maybe your parents don't understand, and they're just like, whatever Canada says. We're like, no. And we worked with him, did the homework, whatever. You keep reminding the teacher every time you walk in class, I speak English, right? Mm-hmm. And just continued. And then, you know, I think, I don't know if they realized that there were a group of other students that saw what was happening. And, you know, we spoke up too. Like, we went to the secretary, like, he speaks English. Why is he in that class? And, you know, within a couple of months, he was out. Because it was like, we stood up. We stood our guards. And it was like, no, you're not putting him in there because he's Jamaican. You don't understand him. He's coming from an English-speaking country, right? Adjust. He's writing it. That's it. You don't understand him to write it. Like, whatever it is. So, and that really taught me. It was a reality, as in, like, you know, they're going to label you. They're going to put you in a bucket and they're going to say you're not good enough. You're not English enough. You're not whatever. So you really had to stand up for yourself.
So how did you get into writing to begin with? Was it something you started doing when you were younger?
Yes, it is. Since I was 8 years old. So my dad, as I mentioned, is a jazz musician. So, you know, we'll be like, I've been making up songs while he's playing the guitar, and then I'll play the guitar too. And, but I love writing poems. At 8 years old, I used to write it in my exercise books. That's what we call it back home.
Yes.
Short poems and whatnot. And it continued all the way through. I just consistently always wrote poems. And by the time I was like in my early 20s, it just increased. It became, you know, of course, your poetry matures with experience. And then you're writing like love poems and all this kind of stuff, right? And then you're meeting people online in the same poetry groups, and it's just like, you know, encouraging you. It's inspiring, and you know, you just keep building that skill. So that's where it is. And poetry hasn't stopped. I mean, some of my books are literally just a big poem that's a child's book. So
gotcha. So then what then inspired you to start writing children's books that are specifically tying in some cultural aspect to it?
Yeah, so and you know, one thing with art, it opens the door to so many. You really want to learn. Like I'm that child, I'm a traveler. I was exposed to so many cultures. My mom, we would go to like various events in Toronto, cultural events, and try new foods, and you learn, and you know, you just have the people around you are quite diverse, which is great, and you learn about them, and you know, you realize, you know, whatever differences you have, you still come to respect that in the same way you demand that of your culture. When it came to writing children's book, it was the birth of my son that inspired that, because once again I realized that we are in Canada, but there's still people that are going to feel like you're not Canadian enough, right?
Mm.
And whatever, you want to feel that, that's great. I'm proud of where I'm from. I was repping for my Caribbean. You know, I am a child where my grandfather, my dad's dad, is a Pan-Africanist. He, you know, he met Marcus Garvey when Marcus Garvey was in Guyana. So my first introductions to books were books about Black leaders. Mm. And a lot of times you took that for granted until when you're in high school and you see other kids who had the same mentality, and then you talk about it like, you know about that? And it's like, great. And you hold on to it. Most of the arts in my home are African art. I know my background. I know my history. and such, because I was exposed to it as a child. And my ex-husband, of course, is Kenyan. So, you know, we go to Kenya. I love Kenya so much. I'm like, no, we're going to have our wedding in Kenya. Like that level, right? I've been there like 3 times and it's just... So I'm raised in a tight cultural aspect. So then I'm having a baby who is, of course, Canadian, with a Caribbean mother and a East African father. So you know for sure he's coming out talking about, and then he can turn to Jumbo, you know, Jumbo, about Yasko. You know, he's going to be that child. So I'm looking for books to represent him. When you're nesting, you're starting to get books, like, you don't want books on the shelf for kids. And it's the first time you're literally paying attention to this. And then it strikes you like this, it's a brutal reality you had to face. Like, I never had these books as a kid. And I grew up in the Caribbean, and we all know the effects of colonialism in the Caribbean. Yes. The books we get have more white authors, more white history, Shakespeare, mm-hmm. and all this stuff. And I thought of it. I never had a Black Santa in my books when I was young. I had a Nancy Spider, which was great and wonderful, but I don't look like a spider, right?
Yes.
Great teaching lessons, but as a child, and you're looking at all these books and you're seeing like the pirate train and the this and the that and the everything, and then you're like, holy, I got to this age without this, but there's no way I want my kid to be like this. It's a brutal reality as a parent. Yeah. And it's like, no. Like, I write. At this point, I've already released a poetry book, and I'm like, you know what? I'll write a book. I know the self-publishing process. I worked at in publishing at that point, right? But the company I work for is just academic textbooks. They don't do trade. Trade is a whole different form in business, you know. But regardless, I understand publishing. I know the steps. I'm really technically skilled. Like, I know how to format my files, my PDFs and such. So that was also a great privilege of mine. Mm. And I'm like, I'm going to use these skills. So I wrote the story, Command's First Carnival, which was literally this book, right? Oh, my first self-published book. And it's about a little 8-year-old Canadian Black child's first visit to Carnival, to Caribana. It is something that 99% of us experience, or mm-hmm. we see on TV. Like, this is reality for us. And I'm like, yeah, my child's going to go to Carnival and he's going to wave a flag. He's going to eat beef patty or Korean roti. He's going to see the masqueraders, and he's going to want to play mass, and he's going to want to go to the Caribbean, right? Mm-hmm. So I wrote this story because I go, and I just promised myself that until he's 13 years old, or regardless, in his entire life, in his entire childhood, I will make sure that I publish 13 books. And that is my goal. And I said that, you know, if it's every year of his life or whatever, I'm going to have 13 books. So that in 13 years, another Black mother like myself have a baby, she will not go on Amazon, she'll not go in the library and go, I can't see my child in that book. She'll be able to have mine to choose from and many others within our community. Regardless. That's awesome. And I wasn't seeking approvals from big publishers. I did it on my own. You can go on so many platforms and learn how people do it. It's not so hard as people think. They think like, oh no, that sounds like a lot of work, whatever. Or you got to spend all this money. And no, don't let anyone take thousands of dollars from you to publish a book.
I guess that brings me to my next question for you then. So you mentioned, you know, that you were inspired to write books mainly because you were having a child. So you weren't really seeking approval to even think of becoming an author, like to be like taken on by big publishers to that extent. But it happened. So
it did.
What is a secret sauce? Like, anyone who's looking to be an author themselves, especially here in Canada, what tips would you give them if they are looking to do that for themselves?
The thing is, for me, it was just the drive and a passion, and it's weird how it paid off. I still work. I still have a career. Mm-hmm. And at this point, after when Command's First Carnival came out, I had just, you know, did my legal separation. It's just my son and I, and, you know, it just, I can't complain. It was just going, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to take care of my kid. I got these books going. I'm living my life. I'm doing my thing. And it's all for my child, right? And, you know, I did it because it was fueled a bit by anger for not having books like this, and anger that I'm having a child in 2015 and there still aren't books like this in Canada. And the anger of literally paying attention to the industry and realizing that they weren't giving people like me a chance. They weren't picking this up. It was rare. They'll tokenize and think like, okay, we did one person or we did like five people. That's enough, you know, ignoring like the 100 years of like, you haven't given us an opportunity. Like it was mind blowing, but once again, not seeking approval. And I said, I'm just going to keep doing it. And every year I did it. Every year I did it. I did it. I got it online. I got it in stores by calls. I didn't even go into stores on a footstep. At this point, I wasn't so much promoting heavily myself, just like the book. And it wasn't until like by my third book, I stepped into a store and they were like, we're selling your books. It's the first time we're meeting you. Right? And I'm getting my royalty checks, right? From like Ingram Sparks. That's where I did it. Right. And it's just like, and I'm going on, you know, online filing illustrators or illustrator, put the story out. And, you know, I'm going with the process until I realize like, they're like, you should do readings in the library. There are people checking out these books and they love it. It was in the Toronto library. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll go. And of course that no one prepares you for this first experience where you say, okay, I'm going to do a library reading of the book. And, you know, kids come in, you see the black kids staring at you as they walk in. And because they're seeing a black author for the first time. And then you open your mouth and then you say something like a piece of black cake. And they're like, you see them like they're like staring at you.
Oh
like,
my God.
They can't, like, is she saying something from my, is it in the book? Let me, after the book, they came and they're staring at you and they'll look at the book and go, can I see? I remember this 8-year-old. Let me see that book. You have that written in there. And I'm like, yeah, what do you think? I was making it up. And he's looking at, and then he looked at me and he says, my parents are Jamaican. And I'm like, that's nice. I go, so you eat black cake? He goes, yeah, but it's in the book. How does it get in the book? And it's just, but, and then some of them came and they want to hug you. Like, can I hug you? And they're squeezing you and they're hugging you. And they're like, yeah. And they're telling you, yeah, I went here before. I visited my grandma and I did, you know, they're just telling you. And then you have other kids who are like, this is so cool. And they're telling you like, you know, in my family, we eat this or that, you know, Asian kids talking about these different foods they have, and they opened up. And that's when you realize, okay, this is bigger than I actually thought. Like, this is huge. Like, you literally have to be present. And then I was more present. I would read. I went to schools. We had teachers reaching out to me and go, do you do school readings? And I'm like, no. And they're like, can you come to school readings? Like, can you do this? And then I was like, okay. I went to the book fairs and I said, okay, I'll sell my books. I would sell out of my books in the first like hour, gone. And I wasn't the type of author to like buy a bunch of books, because you'd have to invest a lot of money to get your book from Ingram Sparks from the US and shipped over, right? I wasn't selling books from my trunk. I made sure it's in Indigo, it's accessible. And more so, my biggest thing is it in the library, because I wanted kids to have free access to the book. I'm doing this, it's activism for me, right? It's pure representation. I wasn't into the business of it. I would make back exactly what I put in and I'm fine. But then when I realized I'd get like a royalty check and it's like quite a bit. It's like, oh, you sold like 200 books this month. I'm like, are you kidding me? A piece of black cake for Santa just increases because it's in the US too. Then you had Americans reaching out. And to me, I would honestly have to say it was just the energy you put into the universe and your intent that it gravitated. And with that, it just encourages you to like, yes, let's do more. Let's keep doing more. Let's keep promoting. And then you start to attract eyes. You start to attract people. My boss, he's like, look, we're going to get Chalkboard to do this. He goes, you know, and I kept doing it. He goes, for a Ahsoka birthday party, he goes, no, let me just send it to her and see. And Chalkboard, the CEO, she read it and was like, we're going to do this. And this was in 2019. She goes, we're doing this. This is our first trade book. And they just do workbooks. And it's that energy and the intent. And she noticed that, number one, you got someone working in publishing, a black mom, and she's doing it. to make sure that it's out there, because it isn't. Representation is so poor. You know, it's institutionalized racism. And in, you know, when you have a publisher that says, you know what, we're going to go against our grain and we're going to do this for you. I appreciated that. And at that point, my guards came down a bit and it was like, okay, I handed it over. I go, hey, I have an illustrator. My illustrator is African. We're not changing the illustration.
Yes.
The loaf rice is there. And she, you know what? It was so, she's like, we're not touching nothing. It's going to be authentic. It's going to be pure. You're the writer. This is your culture. This is your voice. It's on you. And it was like, okay. And then it got published. And then it was like, you know, when you get published by a traditional publisher, it's a bigger platform. It's bigger. Yes. But you've already been doing that groundwork. I've already been going with Soca Birthday Party, Command's First Carnival, Miles Away in the Caribbean. Like, I've had that with me. And they're like, we'll take that too. So I find that when people see your passion and they realize that this is going to get done with or without them, you're untouchable at that point. And I'm still learning as I go, but I'm still going to keep this passion. And that's it. As long as they know that about me, I'm good. I'm coming here with good intent. Like, you know, this is what it's going to be. Like, I want to take you to my table. We're going to talk. We're going to have a Caribbean accent. You can hear where I come from West Africa. You can, I ain't changing. I'm not watering it down for anyone or anything. And I want to make sure kids that who aren't of African Caribbean background hear authentic stories. Your child's going to learn. I love it when my child comes home and he's like, Mom, I could say hi in Mandarin. And he feels so good. And he feels, you know, confident. Like, yes, I know another language. And he's just, I want to send my kid to school to have that experience, right? Mm-hmm. So all the kids, when they come and I read, I want them to walk away like that. Like, guess what? Do you know Grenada is the island of spice? Do you know that St. Vincent has black sand? There's black sand in St. Vincent.
So Belize is actually a, you know, very real place. And kids can, you know, understand that I come from such a beautiful country. It doesn't matter my experience. Like when I tell kids, you know, we used to have bush tea with a little bit of sugar inside. If you don't have Milo, you know, they're looking at you like with a level of poverty, but we had the best time and we were healthy. We climbed mango trees, you know, and I'm from Guyana, South America. We dodge anacondas. I was one of those country kids. You'd be in the back dam swimming and, you know, our water is dark. Like when you get into the interior, right? So it's not all like green water and blue and, you know, so And I cherish those childhood experiences, and I still feel like I came from such an awesome place. And when I read stories like that to kids here who are not of Caribbean background, who've never grown up in such environments, to them, it's like, this is such an adventure. And they have so much questions to ask, and they see the joy in your face. They feel the genuine like excitement when you talk about these things, and it's a good feeling. It's not negative, you know, like, and it, in a way, it helps to soften any negative, stereotypical, racist information that they've heard
out there, yeah,
about us, right? Because one thing with picture books is that it has the opportunity to eliminate that discrimination. And even though a child is at home with a racist parent, is that when they're in the classroom, when they're reading a story, they realize, hey, whatever my parent says, it's not really true. Like, there's so much more here. Like, you know, and it offers them the floor to ask questions and learn and also talk about themselves, right? Mm-hmm. But that's, for me, it's like, I love my culture. I love writing about it. And the reaction from children and parents, it just fuels me more. And it's just the energy you put into the world, and then you just start attracting. I actually got agented last year, and the agent actually approached me, which was awesome. I've never been for an agent. I was like, I need an agent. I mean, you do for bigger book deals, which is awesome. And just like, you know, secret, I got a book deal, but it's not announced. I can't say anything yet, but you know who it is, but I did. That fast.
And congrats.
Thank you so much. And it's just, you know, more proof that what you're doing is right. What you're doing is needed. Also, one of the biggest help I got was from Fold. and they do represent diverse voices, authors, and illustrators. And Jahiel Richardson, she's actually an amazing author. Her latest book, Gutter Child, you've got to check that out. She said to me one time, she invited me to Fold, and I came with my books and I did a reading, and my book sold out so fast. And she goes, girl, you deserve to be on the shelves in Indigo. She goes, this is where you need to be. And at this point, I'm just like, they ain't going to give me no goddamn chance. Like, I'm just going to do my thing and rebel against the system, you know. And it's just, you know, she goes, you deserve to be on there. And she really did play a role in getting the eyes on me, as in like, yeah, you want to know what you're missing? Have you ever checked out Yolanda Marshall on Twitter? All of a sudden, I'm seeing people liking it. I'm like, oh, I guess, you know, they're following me on Twitter. I was hardly on Twitter, and they just gravitate, right, towards it. So I love that I'm in a space now where I do have my allies with me, and they accept me for who I am, and they understand my intent on what my books are, you know, being my audience, my representation, my culture. And they're not coming to me with like, oh, you know, you should do this, or, you know, water it down. It's like, no, we're going to keep it real. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure in my books that when a kid from African or, you know, the Caribbean diaspora pick it up, they'll feel like, yeah, I do this. This is real. This is it. Like, you know, when I read to schools now, I do a lot of, like, last week alone, I think I read to like 2,000 kids virtually. And you see them going, my mom is from here. My dad is from Guyana. And yeah, that's what we eat at home. And you have teachers saying the same thing. You just, you know, you're doing the right thing. And it's just I'm going to continue. Like, I'm not going to change. I still have that hustler mentality. And, you know, I help a lot of authors as much as I can. I take the time out. If they come to me, I'll tell them, okay, this is where you can go to pay $100 to format your book. Here are illustrators from, you know, Fiverr to choose from, who to go there, get it done. This is how much it takes to, like, do your book, publish your book on Ingram. Most of the time they have coupons, so you never have to pay a thing. This is how much you do for a discount. And I help authors any way I can for free, you know, because I'm on a path to put books out there. And the more I encounter other people doing the same, I encourage them, because I want to see more. I genuinely want to buy your book. I want to read it to my child, and I want to stack my shelf. I want to make sure that as much as I'm doing 13 books when he's 13 years old, by the time he's 13 years old, hopefully I have 100 books on that shelf.
Wow.
And if I need to, like, help others, if someone comes to me and they're like, you know, I have a children's book, you know, what do I do? I have a budget and whatnot. I'll help you. I'll tell you where to go as much as I can to do this, do that, and whatever you can, right? Because it is for a community and it is for a good. And, you know, a lot of people are like, you know, you have a good business. Like, I don't even have a GST number. I never did this because I want to make money. I did this because it is my activism. And I never had books like this as a kid. And I think all of our kids deserve to be represented. I believe we deserve to be celebrated. I believe we need to learn about each other. Sweet sorrel stand. I teach Caribbean people, you drink sorrel. It is from West Africa. They call it Zobo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you had a lot of Caribbean. I didn't know that. Yes, that's what it is.
Yeah,
you know,
it has different names for sure.
We have different names. Washa in you know, in Ghana, rice and peas. Rice and peas in Jamaica, cooked rice in Guyana. Like, it's the same. Pilau, you're eating in Trinidad. Pilau is eaten in East Africa. Same dish. And when you try to show that, hey, this is where we're from, we are so similar in many ways. So similar, you know, and we just have to, like, own that and come together and unify each other, because that's one thing kids deserve to see, a unification. And once again, celebrating us, you know, teaching others how to celebrate us, celebrate with us. That's my goal. So I try to help other authors as much as I can. And it's just, that's the energy I'm going to put out there. And so far it's been working, because it's been allowing the right sources to gravitate towards me and elevating me. And I'm so grateful for that. When people come to me and they sense my intent and they're like, okay, I can help you. Like, what can I do? Or, you know, I want to do your next book. Or, you know, I'm so grateful for that. And that's literally how it's been just moving up, right? I do my own social media as much as I can. You know, I don't, you know, put a lot of money into it or whatnot. I actually took some fresh photos the other day.
Wow. Okay. So I think we got a lot of gems in this video today. And definitely, as Yolanda mentioned, it's all about the intent, having the right people around you, not giving up. And also, I think one of the things I really got from you was just be true to yourself and everything will fall into place. So I want to thank Yolanda so much for being here with me. Please go ahead and check her out. Where can they find you?
You can find me, I think if you Google Yolanda T. Marshall, I'm everywhere, but you can find my books at your local Toronto libraries and other libraries. You're going to find throughout Canada, Amazon, Indigo, Barnes & Noble. I also have eBooks on Apple iBooks platform. I run a podcast called Caribbean Story Times where I recommend other authors you should check out. Please check them out. I'm just, you can get my books anywhere, to be honest.
Awesome. So thank you again. And to my viewers, thank you so much for watching and I will see you next time. Bye.
I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe or follow and leave us a review so we know how you're finding this podcast. Looking forward to you listening to more episodes with more inspiration, more insights, and more business and culture. If you're listening to the Business and Culture podcast on Spotify, you can participate in our poll and questions for every single episode. We would love to hear from you and get your feedback. Catch you in the next episode.